This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
This is Saturday Magazine. You are with Macca and Paul today. Tass is off ill today, so get well soon, Tass.
He's got a dose of Tastro.
Exactly. Tastro. Macca, who have we got on next?
Thanks, Paul. Our next guest is Matthew Guy. Matthew is the Liberal member for Bulleen, also the Shadow Minister for Finance and Trade, and Matthew is a previous Leader of the Opposition. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Good. Now, you're going to get off light today. Tass is not here.
You know, I actually thought that when you said he wasn't in, I thought, oh, you breathe a sigh of relief on that one.
There you go.
That's no good. That still leaves you there, Macca. So I haven't had Paul before, but I'm a bit worried about you, mate.
Oh, no.
Macca's in a good mood today.
I'm in a good mood, and I want to...
Well, that's rare.
Oh, dear. Look, I wanted to start off with a couple of things. I'm keen for our listeners. You know, the last time we actually spoke to you on air, and correct me if I'm wrong, it might have been when you're opposition leader, but the one that stuck in my mind most was when there'd been some serious assaults against paramedics, and we had the Ambos Union on, we had the guy who'd been seriously assaulted, and we had you, and we had a bit of a phone chat. And feedback from listeners was really positive. And when I spoke to a few people before coming on air today, they were keen to understand Matthew Guy as a person, you know, to understand what is it, you know, how would you define your liberalism? What do you define as liberalism from your eyes? How would you define it?
Liberalism, to me, it's a long-established political tradition in Australia, right back to Alfred Deakin and the start of Federation. It's always been a focus on the individual, on the state being able to empower the individual to succeed to their ability. So it's not about trying to bring everyone down to one common denominator. It's about saying, we'll help people thrive. What they put in, they'll get out of it. So the state is there to empower people. I go further. It's also about not having the state control people's lives or interfere in people's lives. Or it's a theory that is based on, as I keep saying, the individual. What we can do to make people prosper and give people the opportunities to prosper in their life. So, you know, it is a recognition, a political philosophy that has a recognition that so many of us are so different. So therefore, we need to have the state that empowers us to achieve and to do better. It doesn't mean we're all the same and to dumb us down to the same level and to teach kids all the same and to teach them all the same things. It means to respect the fact that so many of us have different talents, and you put the state there as the way to make that happen, but to not to enforce it upon people. I remember Dr. David Kemp, he was a Liberal federal education minister. He used to do some wonderful talks about the theories and principles of the Deakin Liberals. And, you know, I mean, Macca, you and I have talked about this, and a lot of journos I talk about how the Liberal Party nowadays has what you would say is a very prominent conservative wing. And that's true. It certainly does. But it's not the defining principles of the party. The party is founded, and Menzies founded the Liberal Party with the name Liberal, not Conservative, for that very reason. Because the party's principles are founded on liberalism, which came through with Alfred Deakin and many other liberals, great liberals in Australian history, and that's where we, I think, should be today.
Have you told those conservative members of the party?
I knew you'd say that. Look, the one thing we have, and I say this with all sincerity, is a deep respect for the fact that the party has two very different wings to it. I mean, so does Labor nowadays. You've got the industrial, hardcore, working class, blue collar, and then you've got an inner city a left constituency that's very, very different, and they've got to make that work. Well, so does the Liberal Party. We've got conservatives and liberals. And then there's many of us who, on various different topics, might straddle both. You know, people like me. But that's the majority. Now, we might be more conservative on some issues and more socially liberal or smaller liberal on others. I mean, I have a view that the state has no role in interfering what people do in their own private life. I think that's, you know, as long as people, we all keep to the law, what we do is our own business. And that should be the state's premise too. But, you know, so I think those two, you know, those two philosophies, like any political party, you have different points of view and you've got to balance them off.
Does the state, and I use that term loosely, Matt, does the state have an obligation to also provide a structure that, you know, protects individual liberties, but also, you know, protects people, how can I put this, from other people exercising what they might believe is their right? And we can talk, you know, about freedom of speech or freedom of religion, etc.
Yep.
But what role should and must the state play to enshrine those freedoms, but also to protect people who might be disadvantaged because of who they are and what they are and what they believe in?
Yep.
So how does that work?
Macca, that's a very good question, because in any Western democracy, rights come with responsibilities. And that's where the state does need to have some influence, because I think that while I'm one of these great believers in freedom of speech and people being able to express themselves, that comes with responsibilities. And that's why, for instance, 18C, when I was the Multicultural Affairs Minister, I was not supportive of people who wanted to repeal those provisions in the Racial Discrimination Act, because rights come with responsibilities. And that means that you don't allow people to run around and either post things that are deliberately insightful or hateful or vengeful, because we have responsibilities to keep a cohesive society together. You know, democracy is pretty fragile, and that means that it is also a political system that can't protect itself against people who abuse it.
Mm.
And so that's when you see people elected who use the fora of parliaments to maybe go too far, that we don't really have a defence mechanism, because if they've been elected, and you know, you might say Hanson and others in the past who have done that, or even some on the hard left too. So what I would say is that we do have a role as a state to ensure that there are hate speech laws, and whether it's against GLBTIQ communities, whether it's against, we've seen instances certainly of anti-Semitism, and that's rising again, sadly. That's where we need to be able to step in to make some very deliberate and pointed interventions for the state.
Because there's a report due around, let's call it broadly, anti-vilification.
Yeah.
Which is going to look at, you know, things like extreme right and extreme left-wing views, you know, within a human rights framework, obviously including my community. This is one of the big challenges, isn't it? And it's a challenge for political parties, which by their nature are broad churches, although sometimes one might think they need an exorcism. But it is a challenge. How do you manage that, Matt? You know, if I say you're socially progressive, you're a liberal in the Deakin mould, in the Menzies mould, how do you manage that discussion? And how do you compromise, you know, with some of the members of your party, and I'm not going to speak the name, but you know who I mean, and the listeners know who we mean. How do you compromise on that? How do you reach an accommodation?
Well, sometimes there isn't. When you're talking about principles that might allow others to then go and divide society, no, sometimes there isn't. And I guess you just have to make a value judgment for your own values as to where you think you should and shouldn't have a pragmatic approach, or we can't have a pragmatic approach to resolve a situation on a principled basis. And what I mean very straightforward is that if there's laws like 18C, for instance, in racial and religious vilification, which when I was a multicultural affairs minister, you know, it was my view that those laws had a purpose and they'd been around since the 1990s. And they suddenly became an issue when, you know, 30 years after they'd been put into law, people are saying they needed to be abolished. Well, I just didn't see the point, and I wasn't going to back down on that because I didn't see the point in advocating for their abolition, given that they'd worked well for 30 years. So I think there's also a worry that, and I mean this sincerely, some worry that we are kind of creating laws to diminish free speech at every opportunity. There are some instances I think we all worry about the diminution of free speech, but not when it comes to, I think, specific and targeted hate speech. I think we've actually got to look at how we protect communities as well. We can't just look at it from one angle and not ignore the other.
Matthew, hi. Good morning. It's Paul here. I'm trying to get a word in edgeways with Macca.
That's all right.
You talked earlier about having a prominent conservative element to the current Liberal Party, and we've seen exactly what type of mess that got the Americans into. And they've used an awful lot of religious rhetoric to try and, I guess, conjure up messages that perhaps are not in people's interests and are divisive. Isn't that happening to the Liberal Party right now, both federally and at a state level?
No, with great respect, I don't think that's at all the case. America doesn't have a situation where they have political party membership. So you literally register yourself as a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. So you're registered according to your own values, and every single person who wants to vote has to register as one of those three philosophies, if you like. In Australia, you don't register. You're just an elected voter, and then if you want to become a member of a political party, you can. So in Australia, it's a vastly different system. I don't think there's, you know, if people want to talk about Donald Trump, well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have supported Donald Trump. But then again, I'm terrified at almost Joe Biden's disinterest in the job. So, you know, I think America, I just find it difficult to believe that the best America had was two men in their 70s was the best to choose from. No disrespect for men in their 70s, because I'll be one day. But
I don't want to talk about the Americans. I want to talk about the Liberals here in Australia. And I think what I'm trying to get to is that they're hiding behind religious freedoms and religious points of view to try and get over some pretty damaging messages that don't allow freedom of speech for a lot of people. And I can see that happening. And what I don't understand is why the more moderate liberals are not actually taking more control of that messaging. Why are they allowing the prominent right to actually get that message across, which, you know, potentially could be damaging to your elections?
Well, I think only one member of, you might have one member who makes a comment, and that is seized upon by elements of the media as the view of the entirety of the Parliamentary Liberal Party. And that's not the case. It might not be the view of the rest of us, but if one person is seized upon, that becomes the media focus. Therein, of course, is the challenge for politics in Australia. If you're not 100% on song, then the media plays it up as some part of division or some part of extremism. I might add, the same as the Australian Labor Party, the same as the Greens. One person can make a statement and then the rest of you are bound by it. That's not necessarily the case. The rest of you hold the line or have a different form of discussion. Your views don't count in the mainstream media. So I guess that's just a balance you have to play.
Now, I'm just going to share with you a comment from a listener, Matt. Sorry, it's not attacking you, it's attacking me, so you'll probably enjoy it.
That's true.
It says, well, Macca, your ignorance is stooping to new levels each week. Many of our politicians are lawyers, which provides no privilege around disclosure. As you have suggested, well, as a lawyer, there is a requirement as an officer of the court. Most are not solicitors, which is where you'd find professional privilege in a client-solicitor relationship. Nowhere has any politician cited professional privilege as an excuse for what happened or what wasn't reported. Well, that's technically right. I've heard it said behind the scenes. And there's no legal obligation to report a crime that the third party may have alleged has happened. You can encourage that person to go to police, but unless you witness it, you can't do anything about it. It says I've lost the plot. Well, probably.
Have you?
No, I don't believe so. look at the obligations of an officer of the court, look at the obligations of a doctor, look at the obligations of a police officer, an ex-police officer. But no, it's fine. Thank you for that. Now, another message, Matt. Is Michael O'Brien the best person to be leader of the party? There you go, just for a surprise.
Yes, he is. Michael was at my 21st. I've known Michael a long time, and I like Michael. Michael and I are quite close. So if people are looking for some kind of cloak and dagger discussion on that, they're asking the wrong guy, pardon the pun.
Have you have you told people who are behind the scenes who are, let's say, counting numbers to stop?
I've made it pretty clear that he has my support, and I can't make it clearer to anyone, whether it's public or private.
Okay. Joy 94.9, Saturday Magazine, Macca and Paul, we're speaking with Matthew Guy. So, Matt, you're not, just so we can get this right, you're not a candidate for leader. You're not, you don't want people to be doing numbers on your behalf?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, we have one, and I think that given what's occurred in this state in the last year, the focus should be fairly and squarely on the government. Simple as that.
Okay.
And Matt,
we're the only state where 800 people have died, so frankly, we should have a royal commission.
You heard Matthew say himself, the leader has his full support. So that's cast iron guarantee.
I think you're being sarcastic, Paul.
Moving on.
Matt, one of the things...
You've been around politicians too much. You've been too cynical for politics, if that's the case.
Maybe just a little.
You might say that.
No.
So we've got a question here. A listener wants to know, who actually follows you on Twitter and says that you actually block a number of people on Twitter.
I do. Thousands.
Thousands. I'm glad you got so many followers. Why do you do that?
Because I'm not interested in arguing on Twitter. I'm not interested in people abusing each other on Twitter. I'm not interested in people sending me four-letter words and then thinking I should leave them on there. I'm not interested in that. It's a sewer, and frankly, I'm not interested in that. So Twitter is a forum where no one's going to convert anyone else's vote. I think even my political opponents would think exactly the same thing. And in fact, a number of us talk about this, Labor and Liberal politicians, about what a sewer Twitter is, because it's literally entirely negative. So if you notice on Twitter, the commentary from politicians on Twitter is almost entirely, well, very rarely is it just positive. They usually have a majority of negative or hard-level political posts, whereas other fora like Instagram or Facebook is different. And you'll notice particularly my Instagram and Facebook is very different. Like I would do a post yesterday when I was in Mildura up in a vineyard, table grapes, not wine grapes, sadly. And that's a totally different audience, a totally different feeling. And so I think you use different social media for different things. And Twitter, I think, is probably, again, I say it's probably the worst of the lot in terms of negativity, but that's just what it's the way it's developed.
Yeah. Paul has a question for you.
Yeah, Matthew, I was just going to bring it back to current situations with COVID, which are obviously, we've come through a couple of lockdowns here in Victoria. Things are dramatically improving. But one thing that's been highlighted over the last 6 months really is really what's been going on in the aged care facilities and the lack of accountability a lot of those organisations are for the healthcare that they're providing to their residents. Now, one of the things we need to get sorted out really is how is this going to be managed on a local basis for us here in Victoria, and what needs to happen in your view to try and get that back on track again?
Well, that's a good question. Detail, but very good question. Aged care can fall under a number of different parameters, whether it's responsible at a federal level or a private responsibility at the state level. And so there's a whole different level of management. I think the most important thing we can do for the people who are in aged care and their families who have put them there for the absolute right reasons is to make sure that we have clear guidelines around the care of those in those facilities. And on top of that, health guidelines, COVID guidelines, for those who have to go and work in those facilities. So if you do have people who work in one in the morning and then work at another one in the afternoon, to make sure that there are clear protocols around cleaning, around screening, possibly testing on a regular basis, because it's clear we're not going to be free of COVID at any time soon. So our most vulnerable in those facilities need to be protected by a greater level, in my view, of process. He's a Liberal advocating for process, but I certainly do in this front. And also the workers, the people who are working in these facilities. I mean, it's incredibly dangerous for them too. So we want to make sure that they have got the greatest level of protective equipment and screening so that they know they can go to work and feel safe.
Yeah, look, I understand that and I agree. I think we're not going to be rid of COVID for a while. Whilst I understand the reasons, you know, the recent 5-day lockdown, why regional Victoria was included, and predominantly it was because, you know, we couldn't put up that so-called ring of steel. I think the challenge is going to be, Matt, how are we going to live with this disease? You know, we're all hopefully going to be vaccinated. We're not sure how that's going to impact on how transmissible it is. I think that the jury's still out there. But we're going to have to live with it. And we are going I think we are going to have more lockdowns, unfortunately, at some point. How do you think is the best way to manage those?
Well, I think statewide lockdowns, are an admission of contact tracing failure, not success. You know, New South Wales had an outbreak in the northern beaches of Sydney. They shut down the northern beaches and got it under control pretty promptly. They didn't shut down Broken Hill or Parkes or Moree or Bega. They just shut down the northern beaches. In Victoria, our response was to shut down the entire state from Mildura to Portland to Mallacoota, which is ridiculous overkill. And in fact, the government wanted longer. The police said they could only manage it for 5 days. The government wanted 2 weeks. We'd still be, I think, just coming out of it. Which, for almost zero cases, I mean, you've got to do things in a proportional response. We're all concerned about it. Everyone's concerned about coronavirus. I don't subscribe to these people who say don't wear masks, it's all a hoax. It's neither of the two. Wear a mask, it's not a hoax. And we must take it seriously, but also need to be proportional in how we do that. Mm. And that doesn't mean you shut down Murrayville, which is 5 kilometres from the SA border, because there are half a dozen cases around Airport West. I think we have to be proportional around what we're doing, and that's what's lacking in the current approach.
Yeah. A question from a listener. Could be a short answer.
I love these.
Who do you admire from the left in other parties, and do you have friends in the ALP? Well, I know the answer to the second one, which is yes.
I certainly do have friends in Labor. And in fact, the funny thing is in politics, I'll tell you listeners this secret, you actually can have some really good friendships across the political divide because you know those people. I mean, if they want your job, they're going to come at you front on. They're not going to come at you from, you know, other political parties or your own party from within. So actually, and I won't mention them because I'll only probably ruin their career.
Oh, that's right,
go on, we won't tell anyone.
That's right, but I have some great friendships, and I really do quite like some people, even in the current state government, the current federal Labor Party, former state ministers who I know and think are just really tremendous people, and they're from the Labor side. So, you know, we certainly do have plenty of friends opposite. You know, I always liked a UK Labor politician called Neil Kinnock. I know people will find that quite bizarre, but I always liked Neil Kinnock. I thought he had a great personality, was something completely different. I think time didn't suit him. He was up against, particularly with Thatcher, a very, very formidable Prime Minister. But I always thought he was, as a Labor leader, he developed into something I thought had a lot of good qualities to it, still does.
Now, I've got someone that you and I both know. We actually were briefly chatting about you coming on today, and I'm fascinated. I'm impressed, but you have a V8 car, Matt.
I'm looking at it right now, mate.
What is it?
Do you know, I've got to tell you, I've also got an electric scooter. I've gone from one the sublime to the ridiculous.
So what is the V8? What is it?
It's a SSV Holden, a red line. It's one of the last batch of V8 Commodores. I love Holden V8s. When I was a kid, I just loved Holdens. I just loved Commodores. I loved Holdens. So a few people have said to me, oh, why don't you sell it and go and get a Merc? I'm sorry.
Well,
mate,
exactly.
But I like Holden.
That's all right.
Boy, you like Holden, and I just still do. And I don't want to get rid of it. I like it. A bit dirty at the moment, but anyway.
Oh, well, you'll have to take it to the Scouts or something to get it washed.
Are you going to mention the watermelon? Right.
Oh, yeah, well, you've got a veggie garden too, haven't you?
Well, this is a point of discussion. I grow a lot of fruit at home. I think it might be the my mum's European side, which means you have to have a tree that's productive. You can't just plant a tree for benefit, or for beauty, or rather. So we've got, of all things, watermelons have started growing in the front yard, and no fruit yet, but the tree.
Hang on, Matthew, did you say watermelons?
How big are your watermelons, Matt?
They're not. There's no fruit on them yet, mate. I'll tell you what, I'll take a picture and send them to you if they fruit. But my neighbours have got, this is Templestowe, my neighbours have got pumpkins in their front yard.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually look magnificent. The beautiful big pumpkins, they look magnificent.
Well, don't forget, I used to live in, you probably know this, Fife Drive in Lower Templestowe and Larne Avenue in Donvale.
I thought you were going to tell me you lived in, Sylvan or Three Bridges or some hippie commune up there, but now you tell me you live in Lower Tempe.
Larne Avenue, I lived on acreage. I had a ride on mower.
Okay, Mac. Enough of the gardening.
Constituent. Look, it's interesting. I did want to talk to some more policy stuff, but one final question. Look, we'll touch on that next time we have you back. What type of music do you listen to on your earpods? What do you listen to relax?
God, you're going to laugh. It's such an embarrassing question because my musical tastes are so embarrassing. Well, it can be a mix of Elvis Presley. Maybe here's one, to the Pet Shop Boys, to Duran Duran. I actually had a Honduran musical singer I know called Benny Munoz, who I like. God, where do I go? They're also very embarrassing. But anyway, I've let out a secret on Joy, so please don't hold it against me.
Oh, look, you could help with the playlist for late breakfast on a Saturday.
I went through a phase of liking trance music, but I think that kind of ended pretty promptly when my wife found out. So,
well, that's probably more appropriate for shadow cabinet meetings.
Oh, no comment. My memory's exhausted. Sorry, mate.
It is. Okay, Paul.
Matthew, I just want to end on a serious note. Obviously, there's lots of stuff happening that we're seeing coming out through Parliament and some very disturbing stories. Just a question for you just before we finish here.
Yep.
Member of the State Liberal Party, are you happy with the culture that you have within your party at the moment? And do you think that it's inclusive, it's a safe place for all genders to come together and actually do a job of work? Or have you got any niggling concerns that stuff that we're seeing perhaps at a federal level could be happening down here in our state?
No, I don't think there's any concerns about the Liberal Party as a safe workplace for anyone of any gender, of any different background, of any background, full stop. There's not. There's many in the media who like to play that up, but we are no different to other political parties. Many like to play that up for political gain, particularly in Canberra. Now, I've seen this over a number of years. I've been in the Liberal Party for 30. I've seen lots of different people of lots of different backgrounds, whatever it may be, come in and out of the Liberal Party with no problem, have great careers in it, either as a staff member, even a politician, whatever. So this kind of confected view that I see in particularly the ABC radio, I might add, that somehow the Liberal Party just doesn't like women, and I see that a lot, is absolutely rubbish. I mean, I was a ministerial staffer for many, many years before politics. I think all but one occasion my chiefs of staff were women, and that was years ago, and they were fantastic individuals. I catch up with one in particular, magnificent. So just this view that they've been trying to paint about us, I think, is deliberate, and it's deliberately negative to suit a political end. I might add, they never talk about my opponents who have similar issues, but they'll only talk about the Liberal Party, and one has to ask, I wonder why.
Mm. Now, in closing, Matt, you probably know we spoke with John Pesutto last week. He encouraged Tass and I encouraged Tass and I to join the Liberal Party in Hawthorne, so we could support so we could support his pre-selection. Would you rather I join in Hawthorne or Bulleen, your seat?
Hawthorne, because they'll get my pre-selection. I hope. I'm not the incumbent member, but I want John back in the Parliament.
Wouldn't you like to have me as a member in your branch?
You are most welcome, but you can vote on John's pre-selection and then join my branch.
Okay.
John's another example. Here's John from a non-English speaking background. He's a country boy. He's by no means a silver spoon background. He grew up in Traralgon. He's a great asset for the Liberal Party. He's a tremendous asset. He's a really decent, straightforward guy. And I think it's a shame that we lost him. I hope he gets back. I really dearly do. And he's one I'll be backing as much as I can because he, in my view, is part of the modern face of the party.
Great. Well, I hope if he gets back that you and he can share the leadership between you.
No. No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew Guy.
Much less pressure in my life now, guys. So it's a much, much easier lifestyle in that sense.
That's good. And look, thanks for being a good sport today. I really wanted people to understand a little bit more about you, the person.
Pleasure.
We'll deal with some more harder policy issues next time we speak to you.
And Matthew, don't forget to send us some photographs of your fruit when they're growing.
I want to see the size of your melons.
Mate, you should see the size of some. I will. You'll be thinking, how is that still thing hanging on a tree? They are big melons.
Thank you, Matthew. You're listening to Macca and Paul.
There's
here.
A line there and I'm leaving it.
I'm going to get out of here, otherwise you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Okay.
You're listening to Macca and Paul here on Saturday Magazine. We've just been talking with Matthew Guy, Shadow Minister for Finance, Jobs and Trade and Member for Bulleen.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.